Hey, Joe, it's Matt Mark calling.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
I don't know what you got on tap for today, man, but I sure do appreciate you calling us. I really do.
Oh, no worries.
Okay. You still sound like a Canadian, kind of.
Well, it comes out occasionally.
You didn't lose that, huh? I was just looking it up because I didn't know that you were from Canada. And when I saw that you had transferred in college, I guess you went to Tempe, Arizona, and I said he's smarter than the rest of us. But you certainly have, and I want to talk a little bit about your background because I know you are one of those people that grew up in music, right? Like your parents realized that you, hey, this guy's got musical talent. Is that right? How's that happen?
Yeah, I think my mom was really a huge encourager. You know, my dad was a little bit more pragmatic at first. You know, I think he hoped I'd go be a lawyer or something. But
of course.
But my mom, she just always tried to encourage me with that. And so I think neither one of us thought that it would end up with me writing church songs.
Mm.
You know, my childhood dream was I wanted to write music for movies.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And how did
got a different plans.
How did that happen? Did you just wake up one day and go, wait a minute, I got a song here and it's kind of a church song, so.
Well, you know, they say the first rule of songwriting is you write about what you know. And so I think everybody, when you have a conversion experience of some kind or your heart wakes up to the reality of who God is, you have to write about it. I mean, even Dylan went through a phase where, like, you know, Slow Train Coming is essentially a Christian album.
Right, right.
You know, in terms of how people choose to define Christian music, because it's the only genre of music that's defined by its lyrical content. And so I would say that for me, it was you know, when I moved to Arizona, I'd been in a rock band growing up, and I wasn't one of the principal lyric writers. I just would help out with musical ideas. But, you know, when I moved, I was 20, and I'd written a fair amount of bad songs about women, I say, because I didn't really know much about women. So they were all really bad songs.
I'm sure you're not the only one that ever did that, Matt.
Yeah, exactly. And then just the more my faith mattered to me, the more my relationship with God mattered, the more I started writing about that. And it really wasn't actually until about 1999. I'd been in Arizona for about 4 years, and I was pretty active in ministry, but I heard the music at Delirious.
Oh, yeah.
They're a worship group from Britain. And when I heard their music, something changed for me in terms of just had a deep sense of, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, writing kind of modern songs that people can sing in church. And, you know, hadn't really looked back since.
No, you have not, and we certainly appreciate it, I'll tell you that. Forgive me for saying this, Matt, but some people say, well, I think it's when they hear your music, they may not associate the name with the music, but when they hear the music, then they know the music. And they say, oh, that's Matt Maher? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I get that a lot.
Well, I guess that's, so, I mean, you know, that's just kind of the way it is. I'm glad you mentioned.
Totally, Joe. I mean, I think, you know, the day and age in which we live, it's almost like a return, you know, back to when music was first recorded, which is not really about the artist, it's about the song. And you kind of got to, in some ways, you kind of got to prove yourself. And I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
When you're go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, you're a worship leader, and I mean, you're one of the best there is. You do realize that, don't you? I mean, because, you know, when you bring people, I mean, really, I mean, you know, when you're on the stage and you're listed to be in part of the music that's going to be wherever it is in the world, you know, there's, I mean, you have led a lot of people in worship, so you never thought that was going to happen when you were in college, did you?
I did not, no. And, you know, I think it's a crazy thought to think of. So I typically just don't try to think of it too much, think about it too much, and, you know, just kind of focus on I think just focusing on being honest and meaning all the things that I'm singing. And it's amazing, you know, because when you sing these songs so many times, you can get to a point where your brain just kind of checks out.
Right.
And you find yourself, you know, singing "Lord, I Need You," and then you're all of a sudden you're like, "Hey, did I leave the iron on?
Wow.
At home?" It's very easy. It's the same thing as anybody else. You know, people find themselves in church these days. I think people find themselves distracted now more than ever.
Yeah, we lead a very distracting life. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Exactly. And I think a lot of it has to do with phones and how much information's on those now that like we kind of quickly pass from one thought to the next task. And, you know, the idea of staying focused and present for 30 minutes or 25 minutes at a time, for some people feels like a daunting task, you know. But that's what prayer in some ways is. And that's a powerful role that music plays in helping people with that.
I'm glad you mentioned the whole distraction thing. I was thinking, I was kind of thinking about that in light of modern day worship and things. Well, there's a lot of critics out there. I mean, it seems like, man, we're just trying to worship God. Isn't that good?
I think the critics of it are people who are more, I don't think they realize they're actually more critical of just culture and society in general. And a lot of the issues that we face in worship music and is this music too modern or is this, you know, not that, and how come we're not singing enough hymns, you know? Because once again, I think you have to have an honest conversation about where are we in some ways as a civilization, you know? People don't read books anymore. They read the internet. They read BuzzFeed stories. It has to shift and change the way that you present, the way that you present truth to people, even the gospel. And so even with songs, the idea of singing a song that's 10 verses long, with no repetition, no chorus, you know, no kind of memorable parts, that you're demanding a lot, especially of younger people who've grown up in a completely different world than their parents.
That's a very good point. Have you ever done a song? Have you ever written a song and then been performing it and kind of realized, I probably shouldn't have done that, maybe? You've
all
never
the time.
Done. Oh, no way.
All the time. I think there's always little parts with songs that you kind of realize, oh, yeah, I went for this thing, this whether it was a concept or idea, and I didn't quite get there. And it happens all the time.
Wowee. So you have to be kind of, you have to be grounded. You have to be, know who you are and what your mission is just to keep going.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think you have to be willing to make mistakes. I mean, that's what happens, you know. You make mistakes and you move on and you try it again.
I guess a message to parents is if you have children that show musical talent and stuff like that, how would you do that? Just let them grow in what they want to do, kind of?
Well, I think a couple things. I think help them develop, figure out ways to help them develop their ear. So there's great training programs like Suzuki, which was invented in Japan, which focuses a lot on ear training with kids because, you know, learning to play by ear as opposed to just reading music is something that it's a skill that you'll keep playing music your whole life when you can do that. When you can only read music, people eventually, they stop playing, and it's kind of like a muscle, you know. If you stop using it, it can atrophy a little bit, that part of your brain. And then I would say, I had a buddy of mine who, he writes musicals now, but when he was a teenager, when he was 17, he was actually one of the top piano players in the world for his age group. And he was also, all through middle school and early high school, he was a, no, it's middle school, late elementary, middle school, he was a ridiculous swimmer. And when he got to his junior year of high school, his parents told him, you have to choose one or the other. We're not going to tell you which one, but you have to choose. And a lot of it was, it wasn't the time commitment, it was the stress. It was is that you can't run after your dream of being the world's greatest piano player and one of the world's greatest swimmers at the same time, because you're not, there's no room for fun in life. So they made him choose his junior year of high school, and he chose the piano.
It worked.
Yeah, it did. And he kept playing the piano, and then he graduated, but he just found a different passion, which was writing musicals. So then he went into that. But he's been very successful. And so, to me, it just goes to show that I think when you're a parent, like, it's, you want your kids to excel and pursue excellence, but not at the cost of their humanity.
His last name is not working, is it? He doesn't live in Warwick, New York, does he?
No.
Okay.
No,
what instruments do you play, Matt?
The piano, and then, you know, guitar, electric guitar, acoustic guitar, electric guitar, kind of a bunch of different stringed instruments. I played trombone for 8 years, but I kind of stopped playing that, and I don't even know if I could make much of a sound now these days.
What a gift that is, music, but, to be able to write music and play music. See, from somebody in my perspective, that's the greatest gift there is ever. Man, you got it.
It's pretty awesome.
Do you read books? We were talking about that reading thing. I mean, the internet was made for me. I was horrendous in school reading books and stuff, and now I just get bits and pieces of stuff.
Yeah, I was terrible at it, too. I definitely would have been diagnosed as ADD, but they didn't have that when I was a kid.
No.
So it was just, he's hyperactive. That's what they said.
Right.
But, you know, I would say now, I have a bunch of books on my Kindle app in my phone that I kind of find myself perusing through, but it is hard to focus and just read one.
A friend of mine said he listens to books, and I thought that was a surprise. He said, yeah, I've got like a 40-minute or an hour drive, you know, to get to work, and so I just listen to a book. And I thought, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Is there a music, now we know your music style. Is there a music style? Because I could kind of picture you really liking maybe the classics, you know, since you're a piano guy, and you know, kind of as a hobby music.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I grew up on classic rock, but then I also studied classical music and jazz. So I mean,
Right. You're a jazz musician. Wow, that's right.
Yeah. So I kind of love everything. I really do. I played trombone in youth orchestra for 8.5 years. So, you know, I just have a deep, deep love of music. And I think there's always something to learn, and there's always something in every genre that can expand. They can expand your horizons.
What would you like to do in music coming up that you haven't done yet, or what would you like to do? I mean,
making music for movies or video games would be a ton of fun. The idea of helping someone else tell a story with your music, to me, just sounds really great. Or a musical, for that matter. I think musicals are pretty fantastic. I think that they have such a huge power to tell stories visually and orally with songs, but also with songs and characters and dancing. That's pretty awesome. Yeah, other than that, I mean, I think I got a couple albums left in me, so I'm just still, I'm still just trying to write the best songs that I can,
I think you're cruising in sixth gear right about now, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Man. Was there a memorable concert? Everybody probably asks you that question, you know, but I mean, there may be.
I would say last summer I got to see U2 in Madison Square Garden, and a week later was there with Chris Tomlin for Worship Night in America.
That was
a bit surreal.
That is pretty cool, yeah. Like I said, you've played in front of some massive audiences, like for the Pope. One was in Yonkers, one was in Rio in Brazil. That was millions of people. They were right out there in front of you when you were playing and leading worship?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, that event. And, you know, when I was singing, everybody was facing the same direction, so I didn't have to see them while I was singing. All those people. So for me, it was a very personal experience, even though there's, you know, 3 million people there. You know, I would say that, I mean, any kind of experience like that, like I left with a much greater appreciation and I think an awareness of how big the church is. I think a lot of times people, especially right now, I think Christianity is kind of shrinking. Like it's sort of this fad that's had its influence on Western civilization, and now it's just going to kind of fade to, you know, in the distance. And that's just not true. I mean, I think, and I feel bad because I think a lot of people who think that are just very ignorant of history. I don't think they understand that Christianity's pretty much has survived like every major ism there is. It's survived every political system, everything from communism to tyrants and dictators to, you know, rulers who think they're God. It thrives in the margins. I mean, that's where the Christian faith really thrives. It doesn't thrive when it's sort of big, fat, and happy in the middle of culture. And it really is when it's more of when you persecute the church, that's when it grows. So it's to me, it's funny. If I wasn't a Christian and I was trying to root Christianity out, I would actually make it the official religion of the United States.
There you go. That's a very good point. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and in some ways it was for so long, and that's why I think what ends up happening is we get complacent. We take it for granted. And, you know, a buddy of mine said, you lose what you don't celebrate.
Ooh.
I was like, yeah, that's a great quote, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of people who love their faith. They love this country. They want to celebrate the fact that the framers of the Constitution created it in such a way that they're able to believe what they believe publicly. And it certainly is. But when you lose... when you don't celebrate that and you just kind of take it for granted, then after a while, and it doesn't affect you from a level of how you engage with other people, then, you know, it starts to wane. And, so being around a big event like that was World Youth Day. It was great. It was like, I was like, oh man, there's like 3 million Christians here from all around the world.
It's pretty awesome.
Christianity is definitely not shrinking.
No. It's kind of like that team from Leicester, England. Did you hear about them? The soccer, I call them soccer team, the football team, who were nobodies. They were cast-offs in a little blue-collar town. Their players were all the rejects, you know. 142 years or something like that. 132 years or something. You know, now that's celebrating right there, you know, but that's the kind of thing you're talking about. When you're like, you know, you got nothing, you're down, and then boom, you know, it's like, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we're going to be celebrating like that at Goodwill Church, I do believe, man. That's the way it's going to happen, man.
Yes, we will.
And you can handle it, huh?
We definitely will. Yeah. It's going to be a great night. I do believe that night there's a guy named John, another artist named John Tibbs, who's with me.
Okay. Yeah.
Don't quote me on it.
I think you're right. I think I saw that. Yes, I believe. Okay, but I won't quote you on that. I'll check it out.
Yeah, we've been on tour together. The whole month of April. Great, great singer songwriter, and he actually has his own hot sauce. But I'll let him describe that.
Ooh,
talk about that. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. But it's really going to be a great night. We're really excited. Really excited about just that night and being able to come to New York. You know, my wife's family, my wife moved to Western New York when she was 11. Her parents moved. So she grew up in East Aurora, Strikersville area, over by Buffalo.
Yeah.
So
she knows about those snowy winters when you have a lot in common there, probably.
Oh, yeah.
We used to do winter.
Words, like effect. Exactly.
Now, before I let you go, I got to tell you that I know I had a long talk with Bob Halligan years ago, and I know you know him. And a guy I work with right here at the radio station, Paul Grimsland, works with Bob Halligan and Kay Rain. So he wanted me to say hello. So there you go.
Oh,
Yeah.
Love that guy.
Everybody musically is connected somehow or another. You know?
Yeah, I'm telling you, it is 6 degrees of separation.
I'm not sure it's that many.
You're right.
I'm thinking it's a couple.
More like two.
No, that's it. That's very it. Well, Matt, how can we pray for you?
Oh, that's a great question. I think you can pray for my family, pray for my wife and kids. You know, I think a lot of people, when they come to concerts and they come, you know, and it's entertaining and they're engaged and there's an artist up there sharing their faith and their life, and they leave encouraged, you know, and they're usually like, oh, I'm going to pray for that artist. And I'm like, don't pray for them, pray for their wives, or pray for their kids, because I think, you know, I always tell my kids now, they're in my ministry and they're only 2 and 4 years old, but they have to be as committed to it as I am. So, because they have to, you know, they have to miss not having a dad around 4 days a week. So, you know, but my son every night always prays for me.
Who's
four.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool. And that it is that thing, because he's always like, Dad, where are you going? And I'm like, well, I'm going to go sing songs about Jesus, buddy, and tell people about him. He's like, okay.
Wow.
So, man. Yeah, it's a labor of love.
What a touching story. Wow, that's pretty cool. Sure. Well, we will do that.
Thank you so
much. Thank you very much, sir. Hope you have, let's see. I'll see you. Just trying to think when. Oh, yeah, that's in June. Okay, I was going to say Happy Father's Day, but I'll see you before then. Anyway.
Right. Awesome. Well, we look forward to it.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for the video. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
I hate those video things. I'm a radio person. Yeah. I don't video nothing here, man. But anyway, you did good on that. You're awesome.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Matt
Marr. Thank you very much.
Have fun.
All right. Good talking.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.